That is the plan. That's my whole goal, is to be a disruptor. And I always say that we'll dismantle the industry brick by brick, but build it back up even more, even better, and even stronger for everyone. There's just an incredible rippling effect that we're seeing kind of throughout the industry, just based on saying to women, yeah, you get to show up and you get to be who you want to be, and we're going to help you achieve whatever you want to achieve, both in your career and life.
Have you ever punched someone in the face? Not in anger, not in self-defense, but because for one night you chose to step into the ring? Wanting to feel the weight of the gloves, the sting of a clean hit, the electric hum of the crowd waiting to see what you're made of? Most people would never willingly put themselves in that position. But what if Olympic boxer Mandy Bugeaud asked you to? Could you say no? Welcome to Voices of Leadership, my podcast that tells the stories of women who are redefining success and thriving on the edge of change. My guest today is Beth Baroti. She is not a boxer, at least she wasn't a few months ago. She's a leader in the mining industry, the founder and CEO of the Femina Collective, and co-host of the Rebuild podcast. She spent her career carving out space for women in industries that weren't built with them in mind, creating networks, fostering mentorship, and pushing for change where change is slow to come. So what can boxing teach you about stepping into spaces that weren't made for you and making them your own? It turns out, quite a lot. Stepping into the ring isn't just about boxing. It's about leadership. It's about learning how to take a hit, how to pivot, and how to keep moving forward when every instinct tells you to back down. It's not so different from stepping into a boardroom or into an industry that hasn't always made space for you. The stakes are different. The bruises may not always be visible, but the lessons, they're the same. In a couple of weeks, Beth will be on the fight card for Mandy Bugeaud's brawl at Tapestry Hall. It's the culmination of a 12-week journey that ends in an actual boxing match, all in support of McMaster Children's Hospital. It's the red team versus the blue team, and Mandy has a goal of raising over $500,000 to help children treated at McMaster Children's Hospital. I encourage everyone to support Beth and McMaster Hospital. The donation link is in the show notes.
Hi, how are you?
How are you?
I'm great, thank you. I'm excited for this.
Me too. I'm so glad it worked out.
Totally.
This is why we do it, right?
Totally.
We get to do this part.
Yep. So, yep.
So before we talk mining and podcasting, let's talk boxing. Because you are one of 20 men and women who will participate in a real boxing match this April for Mandy Bugeaud's Champions for Charity in support of McMaster Children's Hospital.
Yes. And you know what's really funny about that is that I think majority of people in my network, when I initially started posting or sharing that I was doing this, really didn't get the key piece of all of this, that this is a legit boxing match. And as time progresses and I'll share posts or things like that about our training or about what we're doing, the amount of messages I get from people that say, wait, are you actually going and doing a boxing match in April? Like, we thought this was a fun charity event. We didn't think that this was going to be something where you actually had the risk of being punched in the face. And I'm always like, yeah, that's the point. Like, that's the challenge in all of this is, like, we are going through, like, we are training to be amateur boxers and we are getting in the ring and we are fighting and we are doing something incredibly hard and are training for it. I think our training in total is like 14 weeks, something like that. And we're getting in. And let me tell you, like, during training, I've already been punched in the face a couple of times, which I appreciate. I know what it feels like.
Yep,
so
yep.
I'm like getting used to that feeling, but it's a big challenge, but, you know, totally worth it for McMaster, totally worth it for our own family with our own story with McMaster. And I'm really looking forward to it. And it's been a really incredible journey so far.
Well, I'm glad you called that out because Mandy and I have had a couple of conversations about it and she's very clear that you will get punched in the face. And I think you're right. People don't understand that it's legit. And I commend you for doing it. And I think it's fantastic. So talk to us a little bit about the courage and motivation to do the training, which you mentioned, which I want to talk about, and to get into the ring and fight, because I know you have a relationship with McMaster Hospital.
Yes. Yeah, so my son actually was a patient at McMaster for a few weeks back when he was just shy of 3 years old. So he was two. We woke up, he had kind of been struggling on and off with what we thought was a cold for about a week. And he was right at that age where he was walking, like he was walking, no problem, but he still wanted to be carried a lot, but he was getting to the point where he's a little too big to carry all the time. And I remember we were at our house and he was at the top of our staircase and he had been struggling with this cold and we'd been back and forth from the doctor's office with this fever and, you know, nothing was really kind of coming up. And I remember him looking at me and wanting me to pick him up and saying, "Mommy, carry me, carry me." And I kept saying, "No, no, like you need to walk, you can do it." And him like just being really upset about that. And I remember putting him to bed that night and noticing this little spot on his foot, just a little red spot. And I thought, I've never seen that before. It's interesting. And kind of kept an eye on it. And the next day the spot had grown, but had grown with a line going up his leg. And I thought that really isn't good and had a fever again. And we took him to Grand River here locally in Kitchener-Waterloo first. And they ran a whole bunch of tests, a whole bunch of microbiology tests and blood work and things like that. And sure enough, it came back that he had a pretty severe staph infection that had happened. And it was pretty clear immediately after about a day and a half to a couple days at Grand River, they weren't equipped to handle it. And we went to McMaster. And from the moment we stepped foot in the McMaster hospital, the care that we received was unbelievable. The facilities in themselves, the way they care for the whole family unit, it's not just about the patient, although there is an enormous amount of care provided to him or was to him. It was the whole family. My son has four parents. He has myself and my husband, who's his stepfather and his dad and his stepmother. So there were a lot of worried parents and a lot of panicked parents around him. And they cared for all of us so deeply. When tests would come back with kind of funny results, or he wasn't responding to medication the way he was supposed to, or he needed to have a PICC line put in, which is in itself just a really, a bit of a complicated procedure for someone that little, they just were so good at explaining everything to us and making sure that we didn't feel stupid about what we were asking or looking for information. And it was wonderful. Like, it was absolutely wonderful, the care that we received. And so we've supported Mac ourselves individually since that time. My son's now 9 years old. But when Mandy and I were talking about this, I think, you know, it was one of the first two questions. The first question I think was, "Can you guarantee me I'm not going to break my nose?" To which she responded, "I can't do that, but it's probably unlikely." And then the second was, "Well, where do these funds go?" And when she said McMaster, it was just like, okay, well, where do I sign up and how do I get started on this? And so that's why we're doing it. And my son, you know, he's right up into all of this. I come home from practices and he, you know, asks me how it goes. I'm generally incredibly sweaty. My face looks like a tomato. He'll talk about fight night with me and he'll talk about strategy and things like that. And he knows that it's all going for McMaster. And he still has his scars from the hospital that he will tell anybody about who asks. So it just made sense.
That's such a great story. I'm so glad that you're doing this because it really ties everything together, what the Champions for Charity is all about, but then you're still getting in the ring and you're really doing it for real. So I want to go back because your son noticed that you come home sweaty. Talk to us about the training. I mean, you said 14 weeks. How many days a week? And like, are you just hitting a bag? I'm assuming not if it's with Mandy. So I'm assuming you're going full out. What does that look like?
We are going full out. So it is our team. So each team is a team of 10. So I'm on the blue team and it's 5 men, 5 women. So we have a kind of mandatory 3 day a week. Well, we started with 3 day a week sessions. Now it's 4 days a week where we now have 3 days at the gym. So we use SidFit because SidFit, obviously Sid opens the facilities to all of us to train, which is incredible. And I just have to say that the level of training that we receive, just to think that we're being trained by national champions, Olympians, like the top tier boxers are the ones who are training us for this fight is just incredible. But it also means that they put us through the paces. Like, they are not taking it easy on us whatsoever. You know, when you show up at that gym, I think the very first day, our sessions are in the evening at 7:30. And the very first day we all kind of showed up right before 7:30, ready to get all geared up. And they said, no, 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 you're here before and you are like warmed up, ready to go. And you're working as of 7:30. And so our team has done that. And you show up and you know that it's going to be hard. It's going to be intense. Physically, it is one of the hardest things I've ever done. But you form such a community with your team. I think we joke a lot by saying we've only really ever seen each other in our most disgusting states, in the sweatiest, like hardest, like I can't do this, moments. That's how we built our friendships, with each other. So I think it's going to be a shock on fight night to see us all in actual nice evening wear and things like that after our fights. We started with just hitting pads. We're right into sparring now. So we do our conditioning, we do our warm-ups, we do our technique training, and then it's right into getting paired up and sparring with each other and practicing actually hitting each other and blocking and moving and things like that. So for, I think, majority of us, at least for majority of the women, we have never hit anyone before. We've never punched anyone in the face before. And so that has in itself been a learning curve to still love the person that you're punching, but actually need to recognize that you're also doing sport. And so you need to do that. But it is a commitment, and it's a commitment for the whole family. It's a commitment for my husband because he's home with the kids while I train, a commitment for my kids to know that I'm out training for a certain number of times a week. But it's also just so exciting and brings so much joy to our family and joy to, you know, knowing that this event is going to happen, that it absolutely makes it worth it.
Wow. Yeah, I can imagine the commitment, but even just describing the training, I mean, good for you. Before you even get in the ring, good for you. That's incredible. Mm-hmm. That's incredible. Can you tell us who you're boxing against?
I know that I am boxing against Jill Lowry. Jill and I don't really know each other, but we started following each other. From what I can see, she looks incredible. She looks like an absolutely amazing woman. The work that she does with the United Way looks absolutely amazing. And so I'm trying to not let that kind of like creep into my head, because I know we need to get in the ring and we need to fight off against each other. But I think we also just automatically have a lot of mutual respect for each other as well. So I'm sure at the end of the fight, regardless of who wins, we'll hug it out and continue a relationship post ring.
Yes. You can be friends after the fight,
totally,
right?
Totally, yes. Yes. Yeah.
So how can people support your fundraising efforts for this event?
So you can go to the Champs for Charity page. That's the best way to support. And you can support all of our fighters. You can support the event in particular, like as a whole, if you'd like. Or you can go to the Blue Team's page and avoid all the red team if you want. And just come and support the Blue Team or support me specifically through that. Yeah, definitely check out the page. Check out all the fighters. Our stories are on there. Our pages are up there. We're all just community members. We are all just people who have never picked up boxing gloves before, and we've jumped into this. And so all and any support is definitely appreciated.
Well, we'll put all of those links in the show notes, and I think everybody should check it out because it's a great cause and it's such a great event. So good luck is what
Thank
I want to say.
Thank you.
Let's take a moment. Beth and the Champions for Charity team are working hard to reach their goal of $500,000 for McMaster Children's Hospital. It's an incredible effort. If you want to support Beth in the ring and help make a real difference, the donation link is in the show notes. Now let's talk about the Femina Collective. This is what first caught my attention when I started looking into Beth's story. I spoke to Mandy about talking to some of the people involved with the brawl at Tapestry Hall. And when I looked at the list, I knew I wanted to talk to Beth. She's built a successful career in the mining industry, an industry that I imagined was a tough place for women. I wanted to understand what her experience had been like, how she navigated it, and how that led her to create the Femina Collective, which started with a simple Zoom call and evolved into a thriving space where women in mining could support one another. Now, I admit I don't know a lot about the mining industry, but I do know this. Women weren't allowed to work in the underground mines in Canada until the late 1980s. Think about that for a minute. That's not ancient history. That's a generation ago. And that's all I needed to hear to know that the work Beth is doing is necessary. So how did three Zoom calls lead to the founding of the Femina Collective? Let's find out. So let's move on from boxing and into your, what we'll say, quote unquote, day job, which is relatively new, actually. So can you tell us a little bit about the Femina Collective and what inspired you to start it?
Yes, absolutely. So for those listening, I work in the mining industry, which most people here in Canada don't realize how significant mining is to our country and to our GDP. And I come from working within a company specific role and working on the precious metal side. So that means gold, silver, copper, things like that. And my background was generally always in the community development, social relationships, that sort of thing, or what we like to call environment, social, and governance, ESG pieces or sustainability. And I was kind of, when I started my mining journey, I was thrown into it a little bit from someone who was in my network who worked in mining as well, who kind of saw that I had a community development background, socioeconomic background, and thought, you would be really interesting in mining. Let me see who I can connect you with. And so he was really the sole reason I ended up in the industry, and my career progressed really quickly into this executive role. But mining in itself is also can be a very difficult place for women. It is very male dominated. It's very traditional. It's a very wealthy industry, very resource rich industry. And it hasn't always been welcoming to women, so much so that women actually were not allowed in underground mines in Canada until the late 1980s. And so you can imagine that even when the laws came into place or women were allowed to go underground, there was still a lot of stigma around it as, do you want women on your crew? Do they bring bad luck? All of those sorts of things. I am the first generation of woman who is actually able to build a career in this industry, to be able to go underground if I want to, be able to work as an operator or in any realm of the industry. And so when I was brought into the industry and brought into holding this role, it wasn't unanimously accepted with those around me, my peers and colleagues around me, particularly some of the older men who really couldn't understand why a young woman was being given such a quote unquote powerful role in the company with so much influence and responsibility. And it was hard. It was hard to work against that and hard to gain the respect of our site teams, hard to gain respect of other members of our corporate team. And one day, right as the pandemic was hitting, my job required me to be on a plane pretty much all the time. And right when the pandemic happened, it was that early March, I was at the airport and I got a call from my CEO and he said, just stay on the ground for a couple of weeks. And so that happened and I was home. And while I was home, I thought, there have to be other women in this industry who are my age, who are ambitious, who are holding senior level roles or executive roles. They've got to be out there. And I, you know, had been to all the luncheons and I'd been to all the networking events, and those are all great, but they are not a way that I connect. I connect one-on-one with people. I connect by building community with people. And so when I was at our office one day during these moments of, we were sort of let outside and sort of not, I was looking outside and I just thought, I'm going to send a Zoom link out to a couple women who I know, and we're going to connect, and I'm just going to see how everyone's doing. And I did. We had six women on the call. There were a couple from the company I worked for and a couple from another company. And we had this really beautiful call. I can remember it like it was yesterday. It just felt so natural and so authentic. And we all just showed up as ourselves, not as our titles, not as our companies, not as, you know, what we needed to fulfill that day from a professional setting, but really just as women working in the industry and sharing both the challenges and successes. And so it went so well that we said, let's do this next quarter. Let's just make sure we're okay. We're going to check in. And by the fourth call, we had 46 women from 16 companies across Canada just joining and just wanting to find other women and build community. And so at that point, they started looking at me and saying, what are you doing with this? Are you going to build this? Like, we really like this. And I said, no, right away. I was like, this is crazy. I can't take on anything else. I was holding my role. I have my family. And so I said no, but the need kept coming and women kept showing up and we kept having these calls and they kept growing. And I thought, you know what? If no one else is going to do it, it's going to be me. And so I went to my CEO at the time and I told him what was going on and what had happened with these calls. And I asked if he wanted it to be part of my portfolio with the company that he wanted me to build it out for, or if I could build it on my own. And he said, build it on your own. We'll support you any way that we can. But this is your thing. So go and see what you can do with it. And so Feminawa Collective was born, and we were born as a membership-based organization in the mining industry to support women in their kind of as their holistic self, not just in their career progression, but understanding that as women, we need different things, we want different things, and we come to the table with different responsibilities. And so we started as a membership organization and then have just continued to grow our influence since then.
Wow, that's amazing that three Zoom links ended up where you are today. So your reach now, I understand, is international. Is that correct?
It is. Our community now is just under 4,000 people around the globe. We have members in Canada, the US, Europe, and Australia. Our memberships, we now offer three different types of memberships based on where women are in their career, what type of work that they're doing, as well as we are launching our Femina Investment, which really looks at how women leverage the natural resource industry for their own wealth generation. So we continue to grow and evolve very rapidly, considering this is our fifth year now. We've had quite an impact, and we just keep growing, which is pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, that's very fast.
We really focus on our individual members. So our members generally pay for their membership fees themselves. They don't pay through company funding. They come on and they invest in themselves to come and build community with other women. And because of that, we really just want to make sure that every woman that comes through our doors feels like she is the best version of herself, so that when we're going out there and we're doing the jobs that are hard and we have to prove ourselves a little bit more and we have to do a little bit more work, we know we have a whole group of people behind us that we can fall back on to continue building ourselves and growing.
I love that. It's such an important thing to have a space for the person or for the women, because it can get messed up in all kinds of other things. And so to provide that focus must be very much appreciated by your membership group, I would think.
Totally. And I think one of the things that we realized when we started splitting out our memberships, and we have one membership that's called The Experience, and it is our more higher end, higher curated membership that is specifically for C-suite and executive women in the industry. And the reason we developed that membership was because we were naturally watching our membership base grow, which was wonderful. But with that came women from all different points in their career, some more junior, some more senior. And we were automatically watching the women who are in these more senior roles start mentoring the younger women, the women in more junior roles. And no one was complaining about this. Everyone was doing it just very naturally. I think it was just instinct for us women. But what I was really realizing was that it was then becoming limited, the support that those more senior and executive women were getting. And we tend to just think that once women reach a certain level in their career, like, hooray, good for you, you've made it, you don't need anything else. You're set, you're done, now turn and look to pull up other women. And the fact of the matter is we still have so much of our career that we want to achieve. We still have so much more life to live. We still have so much more that we want to do. And so why do we stop providing the same sorts of supports for women at that level? And so we built The Experience specifically to bring in coaching, both professional and personal coaching, and opportunities to connect as a group, because we understand their needs are different. And it's a lot of work because it's not a blanket solution for everybody. But when you see the connection start happening and you see the network building, there's just an incredible rippling effect that we're seeing kind of throughout the industry, just based on saying to women, yeah, you get to show up and you get to be who you want to be, and we're going to help you achieve whatever you want to achieve, both in your career and life. And watching them take that confidence and go and just absolutely rock it.
Well, good for you for recognizing that reaching the C-suite isn't the end, and the assumption that your problems and challenges disappear. I would think they probably multiply. And I'm part of a couple of groups that are for the highest woman kind of in the organization, and you need a place to go and talk about some of your struggles. You have to have a safe space to say, this is what I am struggling with, and this is what I need help with.
Yeah. I remember when I got my VP title, I was 32 or 33. So very young for getting that. And I remember going on a walk with the woman who now actually is one of our main coaches for The Experience group. She's been a friend of mine for years here in KW. And I remember going for a walk with her and being equally really excited that I had just got this role and that I was now a director of the company. It's a publicly traded company. Like, it was a big deal and it was a lot of responsibility. But then also at the same time, having this panic moment of being like, I'm getting to the top so fast. What's left for me? What else is there for me? And I'm not even in my mid 30s yet. And thinking like, what happens by the time I'm 40? Have I just tapped out? Have I just done it all? Because I couldn't see what else was out there or what else could be created. And so I think that my own experience with that, while also watching some of these other women as they're kind of facing, you know, the quote unquote top of their career, making sure that they know they still get to create and build and develop past whatever your title is. It's about building the life you want. It's about building the dreams that you want. And your career fits in that. It's not that you build your career and fit your life into it and that gets stalled wherever your, you know, success ends up. But you have to flip that and know that there's so much more and that we're not just, our worth is not just tied to what our titles are and what our career is. Our worth is in the life that we are living and what we want to be building, and making room for that.
So true. And the sooner we all figure that out, the better off.
Oh my gosh. I know.
So listen, right now, this is an important lesson.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. An important lesson and a very hard one to live, because we do get it flipped around a lot of the time as well. So I also still have to remind myself of that all the time.
Well, and that's another thing. There's no end game with that either. It's a constant practice almost of remembering to do it that way. So you mentioned the male-dominated industry, and I understand I come from automotive, and we often talk about the challenges women face, but through your work with the Femina Collective, do you have some inspirational success stories?
Oh my gosh, every single woman that comes through our doors to me is an inspirational success story. I think recently, some of the really big wins that we have had is we've been able to place some of our members on public boards. That's a huge deal.
Wow, that's so great. That's such a big deal. Yes.
Because we know that there are requirements for Canadian boards, especially if you are publicly traded, to have diversity on your boards. And let's hope and pray that doesn't go away anytime soon. But because of the caliber of the women that we have in our network and in our memberships, we started having recruiters come in, like executive recruiters come and knock on our door and say, we need to fill roles. Our clients want them to be women. We don't have women in our kind of Rolodex. Can you help us? And so we did. We also initially laughed and thought, my goodness, we are in 2025 and how is this the case? But also grateful that they have come to us. So we have recently placed a member on one of Canada's graphite companies, one of their boards. We have watched our members take on higher executive and C-suite positions. We've been able to network members together when we know of roles with these recruiters to be able to get them into places where it is much harder for women to get to on their own. And I think our brand is getting associated with being able to place people and connect people in that way as well. And we know, particularly in mining, that if you're at the board seat or you're in the executive, you have a lot more decision-making power and a lot more ability to help shape how the company works and performs, not just from a people-centric approach, but we know companies are more profitable. We know they're safer, which is a huge thing in mining to ensure that health and safety is number one. And we know that they're more efficient when women are helping make decisions. And so the fact that we get to play in that space and continue to place women in those roles is pretty powerful for us.
Well, congratulations. That's such an accomplishment, really. And I hope that you just keep going. I think it's so great for your industry but for women in general, because, you know, when we see it happen, we can all believe we can do it too. So that's fantastic.
Totally. It is. It's one of those things that it's representation really does matter. So right now in Canada, women make up about 17% of the mining workforce. Globally, it's more like 12%. So Canada is generally seen as doing a really good job, which on one hand, okay. On the other hand, that stat hasn't actually changed since the late 80s, early 90s. And so we've been pretty stagnant. And then even within that 17%, majority of women here in Canada who are working in the mining industry are white women. And so we also are very conscious about looking at intersectionalities of race, religion, sex, and really making sure that not only through our membership, not only through our own marketing materials that we do, but we're also elevating the voice of all women, not just white women, and that all women have a place in this industry and that it should feel safe and inclusive for all women to be here and to know that they have community with other people in the Femina network.
That's fantastic. So on the other side, where do you see the biggest need for change in the industry, like C-suite, middle management, on the ground, or everywhere?
A little bit of everywhere for sure. But I think where I really want to tackle is where are the decisions being made. And that is your board of directors. That is your executive. For us, that also includes is that investment side. So mining right now in Canada, if you look at your retail or kind of individual investor profile, I'm sure it's not shocking, but it's old, white, and male. And that's who it is. That's who's investing in mining projects. And here in Canada, there's probably a dozen kind of well-known men in the industry who pretty much dictate which projects get off the ground and which ones don't. There's a lot of nepotism in mining investment from an individual side. There's a lot of like, it's who you know. And so with Femina, we really are tackling that investment side to say we need to shake up that investor profile. We need to see women coming to the table and making investment decisions in mining, similar to being underground. Like, women in Canada couldn't own credit cards, couldn't get mortgages on their own, couldn't generate wealth themselves until the 80s. So again, I'm the first generation of woman who is able to have full financial independence outside of my father or husband. And so with that, we also want to catch up, and we want to also make money and be able to influence the industries that we work in. And I think one of the really interesting things with Canada in itself is that we know, I think it's CIBC talks about this a lot, that by 2030, women will hold half of the wealth in the country. That has never happened before. This is a first time ever, and we are only 5 years away from that. And mining in itself being such a critical part of our economy right now, a critical part in the energy transition, a critical part of moving to the green movement, we know that's going to be accelerating. We know Canada has loads of metals and minerals that are needed for that transition. And we know women are going to hold a lot of the financial decision-making power. And so if we can bridge all of that and provide the education and provide the knowledge for women to look at this industry as something that they can play with, that means that we're also getting women putting money on the table, which also then lends to decision-making and influence.
I think the mining industry is very lucky to have you and the Femina Collective. So thank you for doing that.
Thank you. I don't know if everyone would agree with you on that, but I'm doing what I can.
That's a good sign then, I think, because yes. Then that means you're disrupting something, which I think is fantastic, which is really good.
Exactly. That is the plan. That's my whole goal, is to be a disruptor. And I always say that we'll dismantle the industry brick by brick, but build it back up even more, even better, and even stronger for everyone.
Now let's turn to podcasting. I was intrigued by Beth's podcast, not just by the title, The Rebuild Podcast, but by the origin story behind it. Their description says, "The Rebuild Podcast is an insightful podcast dedicated to empowering women as they navigate the complexities of their career and the multitude of responsibilities that life throws their way." It's a striking premise, because if you stop and think about it, how many women do you know who haven't had to rebuild? Either by choice or because circumstances force them into it. Rebuilding is more than just a process. It's an identity shift, a moment where the life you knew is no longer the life you have. And what comes next is often uncertain. So what does it take to rebuild? And why do some people, when faced with upheaval, find the strength to construct something even stronger? That's what we're going to explore. Okay, of course, we can't have this conversation without talking about podcasting. And I love talking to other podcast hosts.
Me too.
So you have your own podcast called The Rebuild Podcast. And I think it's such a great concept. And so let's just start at the beginning. What inspired you to start this podcast?
Oh my gosh, I feel like it is so linked to everything that we just shared. So I have to say my podcast host, Carmen Turner, is based out in Vancouver. And her and I actually were connected when I first started with the mining company that I was with, because I was given such a big role right off the bat without having a mining background, she was actually brought in to coach me. And she was brought in because she was a sustainability professional. So we met that way, where she really helped me in my own development and establishing within my executive role. And throughout the years, we just became friends. And I remember one of the times we were doing a coaching session together, and she asked me to just, you know, take off any limitations that I had and just talk about if I could envision anything I wanted for myself, what would it be? And the thing that it was that I wanted to lead a women-owned and women-led organization. And this was before any concept of Femina was on the table whatsoever. And I wrote it down and I said, I don't know why that's coming to mind, but that's that. And I cannot see a path to get there. Like, I'm on this one trajectory. That's it. And so it was kind of forgotten. And then when Femina started coming, she really worked with me with the concept of Femina. And then when I left my role with the company, it was when I became pregnant with my daughter after 6 years of fertility. There was a management changeover at the company. Our values were not aligned. It was kind of this moment where everything that I had been building all of a sudden was like not what I expected it to be anymore. And so I found myself 5 months pregnant, no longer had a job, which I think the biggest worrying thing for that was I didn't have a maternity leave. I wasn't entitled to a maternity leave anymore. I had picked up contracts. Thankfully, my reputation was strong enough in the industry, but I was kind of in this rebuild of my own without having that terminology. And Carmen and I had always talked about, you know, one day we're actually going to do something together. It's not either me going to be helping her with her thing or her helping me with mine. We were going to do something together. And my daughter was born late December 2023, and February of 2024, when she was 6 weeks old or somewhere around there, I was walking in Victoria Park with her. And I was listening to a podcast, the We Can Do Hard Things podcast with Lennon Doyle and Abby Wombat. And they were talking about sister in that podcast brought up this concept of sports teams, how they go through a rebuild and how they intentionally go through it, knowing that when they go through that rebuild, they're pretty much going to suck. Like, they're kind of trying out new players. They're trying out new things. They're not going for the win. They're not going for the championship, but they're rebuilding so that they can get to that within the next 3 to 5 years. And I know Carmen listens to that podcast, and we always talk about that podcast. And I sent her a voice note while I was walking, because it stopped me in my tracks. And I said, Carmen, we have to do a podcast specifically around this idea and around the idea of what happens when life expectedly or unexpectedly throws you a curveball and you're in a 180 and everything that you thought you were building and everything you thought you wanted to achieve all of a sudden becomes totally obsolete and you're stuck thinking, what the heck is next? And so we chatted about it back and forth, and then we just decided to start recording and start putting stuff out. And we did. We released in June of last year, of 2024, and we are currently in our second season right now, and releasing episodes. But it is all about that idea, men and women, of the concept of rebuilding, and very much came out of my own, of coming out of this corporate job, leaning into Femina, having a baby, having life. I have a 9-year-old and a 1-year-old. Like, that's a big age difference and a lot of learning and a lot of forgetting of newborn stage that happens in 8 years, let me tell you. And so it was kind of my way of walking through my own story, figuring out my own life and what was happening, but also then connecting with her and with other people who are also going through it, because it's so natural. And I think you said it earlier, just and as we've been chatting, it's like, there's no end point. It just keeps going and things keep evolving and there's no end point. And we like to have end points because it makes us feel like we've achieved something or we've done something. But that's just not life. And so it's normalizing the idea that it's okay when things don't work out as we planned, because we're smart and capable people, and we're probably going to do even bigger and better things. If we just allow ourselves the grace to go through those rebuilds.
Wow. I love that podcast origin story. It's probably one of the best I've ever heard.
Oh, thank you. That's amazing. Thank you very much.
And I do love We Can Do Hard Things too. It is one of my favorites. It's so good.
Absolutely. It's such a good podcast, and they're just so real on it. And I think that's what it came from there and spurred from that concept.
Well, you told us a quick story of how it started, but I want to know a little bit more because I think people think it's fairly simple to start a podcast. So what was, what was your biggest challenge starting the podcast? Minus the 6 week old, because, you know, that's probably one of them.
That in itself, yes. And I think in some of the early episodes, you'll actually hear her in the background because I'm either nursing or she's like crying and I'm trying to put her to sleep, but it's all part of it. I think the hardest part was releasing it. You know, how do you show up to your podcast and be totally authentic and totally open and honest to connect with people? Because I think that's the only way people connect with each other is by being totally authentic and know that everyone is going to hear it. Everyone has the option to hear it and that there's going to be everyone else's opinions on it and everyone else's opinions of your own story. I think for me in particular, there was a lot of tension around my shift from corporate into where I was going. And so I knew speaking about that was going to have a lot of pushback. And I think just knowing, just staying true to my values and knowing that connecting with people is at the core of what I love to do and being able to be authentic allows others to be authentic, but that's still really scary when you're putting out a podcast. We want to connect with people because we knew if we were going through it, others were too. And then I think just the grind of podcasting is hard work, like constantly doing episodes, editing, making sure that you have everything uploaded properly, that episodes are coming out, like all the logistics behind it definitely is work as well. And I've learned a lot on that side of things. And so all of that continues to be learning for us and how we grow our audience and how we move outside of just mining. I think that was a big thing for us because our networks are just naturally so tied to the mining sector because that's where we both have worked for so long. But recognizing this concept is universal. And so that's what we're looking at right now is like, how do we then grow that audience and grow what we're doing to bring more voices in and share more stories outside of just our own set networks?
Those are some challenges I can absolutely relate to. Yeah, hitting that publishing button is very daunting. But once you do it, you're in, right? And then you just kind of keep going.
Well, and once you do it, it's the opposite. It's the beauty of podcasting as well. The stories that we hear from people, the people who reach out to us just directly and share their stories with us or just say thank you for doing this. Like you have the language that we didn't know how to put in place for what we're going through. Like it makes it totally worth it to hear those stories. But yeah, once it's out there, it's out there. So there you go.
Yeah, I agree. Telling the stories is my favorite part as well. That's really the drive for me as well. I mean, that was one of the things that drew me to having you on the podcast is the concept of rebuilding is universal outside of the mining industry. And I look forward to hearing non-mining stories going forward. On that though, has there been a rebuild story that has really stuck with you?
Oh gosh. There's been a couple. I think there have been some key themes that have come through a few rebuild stories for me. And I think what the thread is between them is when we listen to women who have been set on their set path, this is what I'm supposed to do, this is what I trained for, this is where I'm supposed to go, and then have a moment, again, whether intentionally or it was kind of thrust upon them, and this moment of kind of sheer chaos where they realize that the boundaries that they had were kind of put on them as opposed to themselves deciding what they wanted to do, and watching and listening to rebuilds of women who then go and start charting their own paths. I think women are incredibly powerful and we are so phenomenal. And we are taking up more space and we're using our voices more. And so when we hear these stories, whether it's about leaving corporate roles and starting their own companies, whether it's about leaving a marriage that didn't work and building out new relationships or new kind of self-love or what they want to build for themselves, it's that whole kind of thread that we see with women in particular of the kind of shackles being taken off in some regard. And those shackles are really safe and really comfortable and really served a purpose for a long time. And it's really hard to take them off and really hard to understand what life's going to look like without them. But then when you see the joy on their faces or when they're telling the stories of building something for themselves, it's incredible. And so I think we've seen that thread come through a few stories that women have shared with us. And upcoming episodes over the next few months, there are men who are coming onto the podcast and sharing their stories as well, which is going to be also just a nice twist and a nice, again, it's not a women problem. It's everyone faces this. And it's okay, and it's expected, and we should lean into those rebuilds and learn from them what we can. So I think those are always my favorite stories, is like seeing the rebirth. It's whenever that rebirth is happening, it's great. It's wonderful to be able to kind of just sit in the joy with someone else.
Oh, sit in the joy with someone else. Mm-hmm. I like that quite a bit. Yeah. I think if we all reflect back, we all have some rebuild story. So it's an entirely relatable theme. And I would recommend that everybody listen.
Yes, me too. We are on every platform. We're on Spotify, Apple, all of the other like ones. We're coming on to join your platform as well. We're going to be doing that, which is really exciting. And I'm really looking forward to that, because I think you just offer such a different voice and audience for us. And again, I think when we chatted, it just made sense because the concept is just so universal. We've said it, but it is. That's the best way to describe it. It's such a universal topic. So we just hope to continue to be able to bring light to those voices.
Well, thank you. We're very excited to have you, and very excited to tell more people all about your podcast.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
So before we go, on sort of a broader network, what do you think the biggest challenge facing women leaders is today, either in the mining industry or through the stories you've heard from your podcast?
I think it is owning our own confidence. And I think women, as women, we face imposter syndrome so heavily, regardless of the success we have, regardless of how successful other people tell us we are or how other people see us, our own confidence is always weighing on us in some way. And I think Alona Mayer just put it out. I saw on a social feed where a journalist asked her, how do you overcome imposter syndrome? And she just looked and she said, oh, I don't have that. I deserve everything that I worked for, and I deserve where I am today. And when she said that, I think so many of us who heard that were just like, that's exactly what we need. And that's exactly the energy and confidence that we need. And so I think as women leaders, we just need to lean into ourselves. We don't need to lean into the approval of external sources. We don't need to lean into being a type of leader that doesn't embody our values. We get to be who we are, and we bring so much to the table. And so own that confidence, own that space that you have, own who you are as a leader, because that's what we need more of. We need more of that confidence, and connect with other women. I think the community piece is so important, and it gets lonelier and lonelier the farther up you go. And so having that group of women, whether it be friends, family, professional networks, whatever it is just so key to remind ourselves how great we are when we're doubting it, and so that we can fill that confidence cup back up and just continue to show up and take up that space.
Well, thank you for everything you're doing, not just for the mining industry, but for women in general, because you're really saying all the things that need to be said, and you're helping women get to their next step and helping them through any challenges and celebrating their successes. So congratulations to all of that.
Thank you. And thank you as well. You're bringing light to all of our voices through this podcast. And it's amazing to listen to and to listen to the guests that you have on. And again, we as women are just absolutely incredible and powerful and talented, and we're everywhere, so we might as well also have equal space wherever we are. So I also appreciate what you're doing as well.
Thank you. Voices of Leadership is part of the Bespoke Productions Hub network of independent podcasters. If you are interested in partnering with us as a sponsor, or if you have a podcast of your own, please visit bespokeproductionshub.com for more information. This episode is hosted, produced, and edited by me, Amy Schluter.